Second and goal, 17 seconds. Freeman on the rollout. Freeman throws.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, DJ E2. Please stand up and give a warm round of applause for your host.
Yeah, what the fuck.net? Doing it big in 2000 in the net, fans. Been an off season, y'all forget. We got the best show on the net, and we gonna bring it to you live. Be a you stream every Thursday night. Old school and Doc always keeping it tight. If you got an email, fit, tell them where to write. Chef to the chat room. If you want a podcast, shout to you too. We gonna do what we do. About to win it all like we did in 02. Now that's Buccaneer football, yeah. Hey, you know what? Hey, old school, why don't we go ahead and start this show up? You did?
Yeah, E2, we'll give that a shot, but the way things are working tonight, all hell's going to break loose. Technology is screwing us on every corner. I think you guys can probably hear me now, but now Manicam is screwing me. It's amazing how much technology decides to take a shit on this program from time to time. So we'll kill Manicam, and we'll get the camera back right now. Y'all can look at that Super Bowl champs picture, which should be nice to look at. It's the anniversary. I know you hear me, baby. I know. It is 2002 technology. So I'm going to try and get the video up and running here in a second as I destroy Manicam. Well, I can't really destroy Manicam any more than they've destroyed it. It used to be a great little application, and they've gone commercial, and it completely sucks now. So we'll see if we can switch over and grab that webcam directly. And there we are. We are live. You should have video now. Someone just said put Megan up. I should have put Megan up, but, you know, I am no Megan. I am old school. Good to have you guys here. Now, actually, it was going to be I look taller. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and put my Super Bowl hat on, turn it back off. Hey, Bucks Mafia, what's up, brother? This is all you're going to get. It is Super Bowl week. You guys have probably seen this. I am wearing the Super Bowl ring that I have. It's a fun week for Bucks fans. It's nice to get a chance to look back a decade back and think about that stuff. But this year is really what we're focused on. So welcome to the broadcast tonight. We've got a lot of things to cover tonight. We got JC Della Torre from Bucks Nation. I posted some of his articles. No pink cup tonight. I've got some coffee. I am low on energy. I've been running ragged. I'm going to continue to do so. It's going to be a rough end of the year for old school. Back from Denver. Great trip to Mile High Stadium. It sucks I didn't bring us back a victory. But the city was amazing. The stadium was amazing. The fans were tremendously friendly. It was a great experience, and we'll talk about that some intermittently tonight. But we've got two guests. They're going to be coming on in the first hour. We've got JC Della Torre. We're going to talk to him about the playoff scenarios. I posted his article about that and a couple of other things. Friend of the program, very, very bright guy. We're going to actually try and he was eating my Wheaties. Peyton Manning had his game on. We're going to try and Skype him in, which will be interesting to see if that works. We didn't have a chance to test it, so we'll see. And then we've got our friend Steve White coming in at about 9:40. And we're going to talk about a bunch of things around the Buccaneers. I could have brought you back T-shirts. Yeah, I could have brought you back Coors Light. They pay you, I think, to drink Coors Light out there. So, yeah, I've got the hat on. I got a couple other things here. I was going to go get a bunch of my Super Bowl memorabilia, and I got it, like, up and displayed, and I didn't have a chance to. This is one of the things I'm actually most proud of beyond the Super Bowl ring that I've got. This is a jersey signed by, ostensibly, everyone on the Super Bowl team. It's a Warren Sapp jersey. He, of course, chose to sign it on the back. You can tell, I mean, this was actually signed in the lobby, and some of them used a marker that bled, which sucks. But there's Rondé right over here. And I have not had a chance to frame this one yet, so I actually got this out of the garage for the night. Hopefully I'll get that framed at some point. The only downside to that is it's not a stitched jersey. It's actually a screen print jersey, but I like it. It's one of my favorites. And I've got my Wheaties box back there. I don't know if you can see it through my big melon head, but I got the Wheaties box back there and then the Super Bowl ring on and that sort of thing. And I think everyone's got some of this memorabilia. It was a great time to be a Bucks fan, especially if you've been a longtime Bucks fan. You dealt with all the shit. And that's why I thought JC's article that I posted out there today was particularly poignant because it really captured some of the emotion that I think Bucks fans went through. Living through the misery of being a Bucks fan and then getting to the mountaintop as a Bucks fan. And I think that we're close to building something new here. And that's one of the things that that I want to talk about some with JC when we go over his article at about 9:20. A couple of other things I want to talk about. We've got some news here from Spent. And I know you guys have a drinking word. I'm not sure where the drinking words are, guys, because I try not to pay attention to them because I don't want to intentionally get you guys completely drunk. The Dougie contest that was run by the Buck Wild Boys, you'd send in your videos. I'm not sure how many videos we got, but there was a tremendous outpouring of effort, and we did have a winner, George Garcia. Let me actually get to Spence's message here. Winner of the Dougie contest, George Garcia of Texas, coming back to Florida for the game, attending our tailgate for the throwback game. He is actually donating the tickets, the youth ticket, to Princess Nasty of the Zeller family. I believe her name is Haley. We've seen her before with her pink jersey on and her little mini Big Nasty Rhino helmet. She's in love with Gerald McCoy, and Gerald McCoy's in love with her. That's awesome. A couple of other announcements. Jersey John, you guys, if you've been to our tailgate, you know Jersey John. Comes from New Jersey, not surprisingly. Hell of a guy, and we're always happy to see him. Cancer survivor and just kicking everything's ass. It's his birthday today. He's probably the ripe old age of 36. So happy birthday to you. And this week's raffle, you guys know we've been doing the raffles. We've been doing the 50-50. The 50-50 usually goes to try and defer some of the costs of the tailgate. We also have the treasure chest out there. This tailgate should be epic with maybe even some famous people coming out there. Who knows? You never know who's going to really show, but it should be a good time. This week's raffle is going to benefit Alex's Barbecue in Carrollwood. Alex provides 1,000 new and 500 used bikes for kids in need every year. He's done it for about 16 years now, and he had a bit of a robbery issue, and we're going to try and reach out and help him out. So the benefits, the proceeds of the raffle are going to go to that. So all of that information, I think, is in some form or fashion on the event page or on the website, but I wanted to remind you guys about that. So we'll have Eliza and Jackie and Spent roaming around the crowd selling stuff, which is awesome. And for you guys who are regulars, you know, it's interesting. And this is the preamble. We're kind of just setting the stage for... And you know another thing we need to send out here, and I just thought of it because I saw my man WTB Commish in the chat room. WTB Commish's wife has been having some medical issues, and she came home tonight, it would appear. So big congratulations to Christiana coming back. And that's great for my man Commish, who is now putting the player total points. I cannot believe that I am number 9. That is absolutely pathetic. That is absolute. How the hell has Captain Bones got 38 points? That is ridiculous. Ridiculous. I call bullshit on this whole thing. I love you, Commish, but I think that if Buckalicious has more points than me, that's impossible. Anyway, we'll figure it. It doesn't matter. We can talk about Freeman haters if you want to. It is rigged, Buckamaniac. But at any rate... what was I going to say when that whole thing went all sideways on me? Shit, I don't even remember now. Anyway, it's because the WTB Commission out there putting the points up there, but I do think that the books were cooked. What's it take to bribe you? How do you get a shirt like this? We don't have any shirts left, I don't think. I think we may have like 3 or 4. We never made up another set this year. I got to get some printed. I may have some for the last show. We don't sell them online or anything like that. We can. If you want to hit me up at oldschool@whatthebuck.net, we can get one done for you. These, which were Beefy Tees, Hanes T-shirts, I think we sold them for $15. People usually gave us 20, but it didn't matter, $15. But we've got some Badger shirts that are play dries that are really nice, that I think are going to be 20. We want to get made up red ones with the same distressed logo. But what I was about to get into was, if you're one of those, we have some 3, yeah, they're all fat guy sizes, because I'm a fat guy and I always order the wrong sizes. So unless you're fat, I don't think we've got any left. But we'll get some more in, and we'll get some in the off season. We'll get some of that stuff out there. My favorite sizes, they spent. Actually, I don't know if we have a 4X left, but we can certainly check. And like I said, we'll put in another order, so don't worry about it, guys. If you guys are really interested, hit me up. If there's interest out there, I can go do a printing run, and we can get them done, and we can get them out to the tailgate or get them shipped to you or whatever. I'm fat as shit. Look it up. Says Joseph. Bye. We've got a crew here. I got a call tonight, and we'll talk about this as a lead-in to J.C. Delatorre's call, which may or may not work, but we'll see. From a producer from PBS in New York, out of the blue, call my house. They're doing a show on the NFL, and one of the things they're going to talk about is fan passion, and they asked if they could come to our tailgate. Somehow they had found about it, I assume Google. We talked about what the tailgate was, and I know, PBS, who knew, right? And from New York. It was interesting, though, because as I was telling the story, and I've told the story 1,000 times, and you regulars already know the story, it reminded me the amazing amount of effort that goes in to these tailgates. And if I don't say thank you enough, I'm sorry. I am notoriously an ass. No, Big Bird is not coming. He's afraid of Mitt Romney. But you guys that come out there early and set up and stay late and tear down and cook your ass off all week, and build the, you know, set the flags and set the cornhole, all of that stuff is just amazing. And for those of you guys who come and actually enjoy it, and aren't able to get there, and that's not a slight to the folks who can't, because some people have kids and are coming in from out of town. The girls that are going around selling raffle tickets, working their asses off the entire time, it is absolutely amazing. And when I tell the story to people who are not there, who do not see it, who do not witness it, they don't believe it. They don't understand, right? So hopefully those guys will come out there and they'll get some more video. We posted the videos, Sven posted the videos from TBO and from, what was the other one? What a Fan. And those are really cool. And hopefully there'll be more of that stuff, because I really do think what we have is kind of unique. And the more that I tell that story to other people, the more unique I notice that it is. So thanks to everyone who makes that happen, because it is an amazing amount of work that goes into it, and it somehow looks effortless every time we do it. So this week will be this week could be no different. The tailgate, Buckamaniac, it's absolutely true. We definitely could use some more bikinis out there, but it is a family friendly tailgate. A couple of notes. We talked about the weather. Another thing is DJAC's got an event coming up. Benefiting military families. Our friends at McDinn's, my man Chris Sweeney hit me up tonight. We're going to probably try and get a crew out there December 18th over at McDinn's. All the proceeds are going to benefit military families. The link is on our page. He's put the link everywhere else. As we get more data, we will talk about that as well as the night progresses. But it's kind of cool that as the work that the crew all does for Ryan Neese and for the spring and for Movember starts to get more and more publicity, we start getting a chance to get out there and do more things, you know, and it's a lot of fun. It's very, very rewarding. So remember that link is up there as well. Get your skulls and swords in. I know Spence already put that link over on the Facebook page. We'll cover skulls and swords. We may go 2 hours. I don't know how long we're going to go. We'll go as long as we need to go to talk about this. We'll talk about the Denver Broncos games. Like I said, I did come back in. I went out Friday. I came back in Monday. For those of you who have never been to Mile High Stadium, that was my station. I had never been there before. It is absolutely amazing. Spence the Drink Word. Oh, that's a bad decision. Whoever made that call absolutely is trying to take advantage of you people. The stadium, the part that's interesting, and I'll get the pictures back. My friend Megan went out with me. Her family lived out there, so we had, like, family all around us. Their club section was beautiful. We will get those pictures back and get them to you. But the interesting part was it's a gigantic stadium, and everything seems to be made out of metal, because and it's very loud. These guys bang on that stuff. It is outstanding. And the fans were all super friendly, which was very odd to me. So I watched my Buccaneers come into Mile High Stadium and play a team that could lock down the AFC West, who was led by one of the best quarterbacks of our current era, who have outstanding receivers, a defense with a guy who's so good he doesn't even hit the rating scale in some regards, and by him scoring a 7.1 on Pro Football Focus's data, that's actually a bad day for him. And here we sat at the end of the game, one score out, despite the fact that, realistically, our team didn't play particularly well. Doug Martin wasn't able to get untracked. Our defense did, I think, the only thing they could have done, which is sort of play in a too-deep shell and make Peyton Manning take away chunks and chunks and chunks and chunks slowly. We could get no pressure because he was a methodical quarterback and did what he's supposed to do. And then Josh wasn't really on his game, right? I mean, Josh had his highs and lows, but he was not on his A game. Vincent Jackson got locked down by Champ Bailey. Chris Harris Jr. is a stud. It was amazing. And they weren't banging the back of their chair. I'm telling you what the deal was instead of being concrete, it seemed to be metal over structure. And so you were able to stomp on it, almost like a high school stadium, right? And Axe, I hear what you're saying about pressure. We don't get a lot of pressure, but we usually get more than we got this week. I do feel, and it's one of the things I'll talk to Steve White when he calls in about 9:40 about, you know, guys like Mike Bennett and Gerald McCoy, who were really causing a lot of ruckus early, have not been causing the ruckus late. And that's something that we've got to figure out here. We've got to figure out quick, because it's going to be our undoing, right? Our defense is certainly an Achilles heel. When the offense can't get into a slugfest, we start having a serious, serious problem. Three passes over 10 yards, says Calico Jack. Very interesting. If we could have recovered the, yeah, if you're relying on recovering onside kick, though, you're fucked, right? I agree, Rook, and that's the thing, and that was the point, right? Every game we've lost, we've been within a score. Most of those games, we've had the lead. This is a competitive team. It's amazingly competitive, and that's one of the things I want to talk to Jason about how far ahead of the schedule we are. Are we on schedule? Because, like I said a couple weeks ago on the show, at this point, Bucks fans I hear calling into talk radio are almost acting as though we were expecting to win the NFC South. Right, and you guys know me. I'm not someone who takes losses easily. I'm not someone who thinks, "Oh yeah, no big deal. We, you know, good effort's good enough." But at the same time, I try and be relatively practical. And I think if you went into this season thinking that we're going to run the table, you're absolutely crazy. You're absolutely insane. And that's what I want to talk a little bit. To Jason. He's going to try and call in here. We'll see if this whole Skype thing works. You guys have to let me know if you can hear everything. He's going to give us a call. We won't be able to put him on screen, so I could probably call him. Give that a shot. Calling Jason Della Torre. Hey, Jason.
Hey.
How are you doing, man?
Hey, old school. How's it going, man?
Going well. This is the first time we've tried to do an actual Skype-to-Skype here, and everything was all jacked up. At the beginning of the show, so hopefully you guys can hear us out there in the chat room. I'm waiting for a confirmation that everyone can hear us. It sounds good on my end. B Sizzle,
sounds good here.
B Sizzle says our audio is good too. So magically, despite the fact that the simple shit wasn't working, now the complex shit is working. So welcome to the show, Jason. I fluctuate between calling you Jason and JC because I'm an ass. I don't know. Which do you prefer?
Either one works. I mean, JC is actually my author name.
Oh, so look at that.
You can go with that. But,
fancy, huh?
Jason's fine, too. That's
okay.
Cool.
All right. Well, we'll stick with JC because it's fairly professional. So
okay.
Welcome to the show. Tell people a little bit about you. I've been reading your stuff for quite some time. I think most people who follow Buck's articles and the blogosphere know who you are. But remind folks who you are. I posted a couple of your articles today because both of them were actually really, really good. And
appreciate
because we talked earlier, it was hot on my mind. So tell people a little bit about who you are. And then we'll get into some of the questions.
I've been bouncing around for a while now, and I guess it started out with Bleacher Report. I actually became a feature columnist for them, and then I got an opportunity to work with the guys at Pewter Report. I just did a couple of blog posts for them and did some of my NFC playoff scenario craziness stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of migrated over to SB Nation Tampa Bay, and I tried to do kind of like what you guys do here with What the Buck. You know, a podcast and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And eventually I found my way to Bucks Nation.
Excellent, excellent. You know, that's with Sander, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sander P. He's in the chat room right now. So, no, great stuff, great stuff. And your articles are typically deeper than the average stuff, which is one of the reasons I like it. But one of the things I want to ask, and we led this in a little bit, what are your thoughts as a Bucks fan and as a journalist, right? And it's a very tough thing to wear both those hats. I definitely acknowledge that, right? And your article today about the Super Bowl, I think, hit a couple of nerves with other people, not just myself. But as a Bucks fan, if you try and be objective, do you feel we're ahead, behind, or on schedule with what you expected coming into the year?
Actually, I'm a little bit surprised at where we're at right now. I thought it was interesting in that I kind of expected them to struggle a bit. It was a pretty tough schedule. And, I mean, I thought best-case scenario for the Bucks this year was 8-8, and I definitely didn't expect them to be in the playoff conversation.
Well, and that's the amazing thing, and we're going to talk a little bit about the MIT-level breakdown of the playoff scenarios that you did today and walk through that. But one of the other things that I think is getting lost in some of these conversations, I mean, it's a good point about the tough schedule. I remember doing a show with Mark Cook on 98.7 The Fan before the season. I had gotten us, when we walked game by game, I had us getting to 10-6. Now, the games that I had selected were all jacked up, right? But when I look back on the schedule, the thing that I said earlier, and I don't know, I'm going to ask you if this surprises you, it's not just our record now. It's the level that we have played consistently.
Absolutely.
Against a very significant range of opponents. What do you attribute that to?
I think a lot of it is the addition of Vincent Jackson. I mean, Vincent Jackson has done a revolutionary job for our offense. And also Mike Sullivan has a lot to do with that as well, with his different style of play calling that kind of plays to Josh's strengths. I think that Vincent Jackson's impact just overall on the entire offense, you know, allowing, I hate using that cliche, but blowing the top off the defense,
mm-hmm.
And the whole you know, allowing them to be able to get the running game going, giving Josh the weapons that he needed, and helping Mike Williams become more of a complete receiver. I think his impact has really had a dramatic effect on this team.
Now, if we go into the Wayback Machine, we won't spend too much time on this because it's really a useless discussion other than the fact that it's academically interesting.
Yeah.
Had Raheem Morris had the same checkbook, are we at the same point at the same time in the schedule?
I don't think so. And the reason why I say that is I feel
that... Because Greg Olsen was a piece of shit? Sorry.
I'm getting a little feedback on my side. That's
oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought I shocked you with my vulgarity. No, I said because Greg Olsen was a piece of shit. I mean, he was a horrible offensive coordinator.
He was, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that the whole West Coast offense thing really didn't play to Josh's strengths. He's never going to be an accurate type quarterback, but he has the big arm, and he has the strength to be able to get the football down the field. And I think the Giants-style offense that Mike Sullivan has brought has really played to his strengths.
You know, it's interesting. We've talked about play action for years. And I'm one of those guys, and there are people that will argue with me, like, vehemently, right? My belief is, and this is revolutionary, Jason, so you may want to write this one down.
All right.
To actually effectively...
I got my pen right here for you.
To effectively leverage play action, you have to successfully run the ball. There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. There are, however, some people who are actually really bright people who know football who will be like, it doesn't matter. Play action always works. And if it works, then the defensive coordinator you're playing is a piece of, he's a tool bag. Right? I mean, that's terrible. And if you look the way, in some cases, our linebackers were biting on play action against the Broncos, we kind of fall into that boat. But no, I agree with you, Jason.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about Bill Sheridan when you said
tailback. Dang it. So, okay, let's do that. The hell with the questions I had down. What are your thoughts about Sheridan, right? Because the one thing that I was surprised pleasantly by, and we'll get into this deep when we get Steve White on next because he's coming on after you, I didn't see us go single deep and get into press and leave these guys. Yeah, occasionally they were on an island from time to time, but I didn't see the crazy shit he's been doing all year. What are your thoughts about Sheridan?
Yeah, I thought they did a lot of zone in this last game. And honestly, with the weakness that we've had with our corners, I don't understand why we haven't protected them a little bit more. Granted, we can't really get pressure with our front four. And I actually had a little bit of an argument with Sander this week because he was saying that we don't really need to work on our pass rush. And I'm like, dude, we are not the Giants here, you know? I mean, our pass rush sucks ass. So it's kind of like we really need to improve that aspect of our football team if we want to have a quality defense overall. Sheridan's, I think, doing the best that he can with what he has. And you can't argue with the run defense. I mean, our run defense has been fantastic. We lead the league in tackles for loss. It's been impressive in that aspect. If we could just field a somewhat competent pass defense, we'd actually be a pretty good defense.
You know, it's funny. Calico Jack in the chat room just said something, and we've touched on this for probably the last 4 weeks. As much as I'd like to, you know, sort of castigate Bill Sheridan, and that's a big money word for my man George Costanza, if he's still lurking out there saying I don't have a vocabulary.
I might use that in the next article.
You should. It's a good one. If you don't have any tools, right? I remember my dad. We grew up poor as hell. And every once in a while, he'd try and work on a car because the car was always broken. But all we had was, like, a screwdriver, a hammer, and, like, I don't know, a crescent wrench. You can't do shit to a car with that set of tools. So can we really be that angry when, to be honest, and I love the guys on the team. You guys know I'm a fan first. But when nobody knows who the hell your corners are, including, like, your safeties, they have, like, the jerseys and they're just a blank panel on their shoulders. How can you expect a pass defense?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I think Leonard Johnson has skills. I think Laquan Lewis, they're real excited about his talent. The thing is, though, they're very raw. They're not ready to be starting corners in the NFL facing, you know, Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker. They're just not ready to take on those guys.
I agree. They're certainly not ready if you're going to try and match up chin strap, right? But what we haven't seemed to be able to do, one of the things that, you know, great defensive coordinators seem to be able to do, great coordinators in general seem to be able to do, is, and you know, be careful, but Raheem Morris actually wasn't bad at it when he called some defensive plays until his team quit on him. They can scheme their way around ineptitude, right? Yeah. And what we haven't done is scheme our way through it. Now, what we see is some really goofy shit, like this crazy defensive tackle stunt where he's going all around the outside. And I know Steve's going to have a freaking aneurysm because they ran that again this week. But you watch the Denver Broncos even, and, you know, we bitch about zone blitz. Like, we don't like seeing, you know, Daquan Bowers out in coverage, but Von Miller steps back off the line. That interception, Josh, was one of the worst interceptions I've seen him throw.
Yeah.
It could have been picked off by about 17 different Broncos.
Yeah.
Right? He was just the first one to get to it. So, I don't know. It's just interesting. Now, I want to ask you a couple more questions. The record that we have, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, Jason. Do you feel this record's legit? Do you think it actually represents who we are, what we are?
You know, actually, I think that we're actually a little bit less than what we are, because I think that they let a couple games slip away that they really should have won. I mean, Atlanta, they should have won that game. There's no reason why they shouldn't have put that away. I still feel that the New Orleans game, even though, you know, New Orleans came back on us, you still had a 14-point lead in that game. Same thing with the Giants. You were up by 2 touchdowns. Most NFL teams don't lose those games.
How about the Washington game? I mean, that's just the coach's loss.
I've tried to put that one out of my mind.
Yeah, so I it's interesting. I don't disagree. But, of course, we're wearing pewter-colored glasses, too. Like, I don't want to. You look at the Carolina game, and we shouldn't have won that one, right? That we stole victory from the jaws of defeat by coming back and getting that
one. Yeah, we had no business winning that game.
Yeah, so, and you know, of course, we got the B-Sizzle in the chat room talking about officiating. I think the officiating generally, you know, runs its course. They apparently forgot what holding was intermittently in Denver.
Oh, my God, are you kidding me?
On both sides, I mean, I thought it balanced out, but, Jesus, I've never seen as egregious holds. But another question I want to ask. Around the Super Bowl article, right? Actually, no, before we do that, I want to talk about the playoff article.
Sure.
Do you think, you know, and, you know, we always think about the soundbite, playoffs, right? We don't want to talk about playoffs, right? But we had no choice because it actually became a real thing. It was actually tangible. Your article that went into exhaustive detail, you've analyzed this more than most people. Do you think playoffs are still a legitimate shot? If you're a betting man, you and I go into Vegas, and after they pull us out of the bar and or the strip club, you've got a grand and you've got to put it on something. You put it on the Bucks going to the playoffs or not?
You're no longer drunk. I don't put a grand on it, but the one thing I will say is that there are some factors working in favor for the Bucks. For example, I think I heard that one of Seattle's corners did get suspended today.
Yep.
And the other one, Richard Marshall, I think is still on appeal, but he may be going too. They lose those two guys, and they've got some trouble in their defensive backfield. And you know, Russell Wilson has been pretty good so far, and he's been impressive, but he's still a rookie, and he at any point he can revert to that rookie form, so they can lose a game like they did a couple weeks ago to Miami, and so yes, Seattle is still vulnerable. I'm a little bit worried about Washington. They're getting hot, but their schedule is pretty tough, and Dallas sucks. They're not going to really be involved in it. We hold a tiebreaker on Minnesota. The interesting one are the Rams. Because the Rams can really start to get back into this race. They got a game at Buffalo, then they're home against Minnesota, and then they play Tampa. So they can win those two games, and then it could be a huge game against the Bucks week 16.
Well, it would be, you know, there's nothing more exciting than having something actually on the line in the last game, right? Now, I think my position is, anyway, I don't really care. We're on house money right now. The fact that we're playing this well is a miracle, and if all we can do is ruin someone else's season, I'm down with that.
Yep.
But, you know, the only thing that we can do is control our destiny at this point, which is win each game we play one game at a time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the fact is if Seattle wins out, they're going to win the wild card, period. But I don't think they're going to win out. They still got a lot of tough games left, even though their tougher games are at home. I think they still have some vulnerabilities that they're going to have some problems with. And I tell you what, I don't see the Bucks losing another game this season. I really don't.
Wow. I hope you're right. Here's the fun part. I don't know if we know how to do that yet. Right? We did against Kansas City. Right? There's a couple of things that I think good teams, and you could argue whether you use the modifier good or great. It doesn't really matter in my mind. They say good teams or great teams always find a way to win the close games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the cliche that everyone talks about. The other thing that good or great teams do is when they play a lesser team, they beat the dog shit out of them.
Yeah.
Right? There's no playing down to the level of your opponent. You go out there and you beat the crap out of them unmercifully, right? You don't see Bill Belichick taking his foot off the pedal. right? And I don't know that we know how to do that. We've seen two against the Chiefs. I would like to see us hang a 50-burger on the Eagles because they are absolutely knuckleheaded terrible this year.
And
I
it's
hate
a special
Eagles.
Game.
Yeah, I absolutely hate the Eagles. So, and now Rook brings up a point. Atlanta, when we play them again at the end of the year, may be resting its starters. They may be exactly where they want to be.
Yeah, I totally agree with Rook on that one because I don't really think that Atlanta's going to, even if they do play Matt Ryan, I think it's going to be a little bit like it was with the Saints in 2010 where they're kind of playing the game with their starters but not really into it. And if, you know, things don't break the right way, they'll just go ahead and sit everybody in the third and fourth quarter. So I think the Bucs stand a good chance of winning that game. And I know a lot of people are nervous about the New Orleans game. You know what? If the Giants beat the dog crap out of them this week, I think New Orleans may be about ready to cash in their chips. And not only that, I mean, the Bucs traditionally play well in New Orleans.
Absolutely.
So, and they deserve, they should have won the first game around in Tampa. So I don't think that New Orleans is this unstoppable force that they were in the past. And let's face it, they're a losing team. This is a team that if the Buccaneers hope to make the playoffs, they got to win that game.
Right. Right, it's funny, we got a Bill Matui, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name right, Bill, you post on Facebook all the time, very insightful post, and on Twitter as well, thank you for the tweets. Probably a little bit more on the cynical side, which is fine, I mean, you can call him pragmatic, it depends on your perspective.
He's a realist.
Yeah, exactly, whatever word you want to use, but he believed, like many, that we'd go into Denver and get our ass handed to us, right? The thing that is interesting is I don't know that this team knows how to do that either, right? So while I say they don't know how to get over the hump and put their foot in someone's throat, and they're not winning those close games right now, not all of them, right? They're not being able to pull them out. I don't think they know how to go in and lay down either. This team has got an amazing level of intestinal fortitude that I did not expect. What are your thoughts about that? Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think it comes from a little bit of confidence in their coaching staff, in Greg Schiano. I think Schiano kind of instills that within them, you know, that don't quit attitude. Everybody has been up in arms about the whole, you know, kneel down, attack kind of thing that they keep doing. But I think that kind of established it early on in the Schiano New World Order that it's going to be, we're going to play to triple digits. It doesn't matter what the score is. We're going to fight our ass off. And then eventually, you know, we're going to see how it stands at the end. And I think they've taken that to heart. And, you know, I'll admit, when it was 28-10, I thought the game was over, and I thought it was going to be the first big blowout that the Bucs were going to suffer this year. In fact, if you look back at my Twitter line, you could see me. Oh, we're screwed. We're done now. And the fact that they fought back and battled back into that game, and you know, had a chance to win at the end, I was stunned and I was impressed that they still had that fortitude to do that. I mean, realistically, they weren't going to win that game, but at the same time, the fact that they fought back and they didn't give up, I think that says a lot about this football team, and I think it says a lot about them going forward.
Well, and I think I agree it comes from Schiano. I agree that is a manifestation of it. I happen to still think the victory formation thing is Bush League garbage. I hate it. I hated it the first time. I hate it every time it's done. I get the message. He's having the results. I still like the guy. I like what he's doing. But I happen to think that manifestation of it is douche.
And also, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on that. And the reason why I feel that way is, you know, if you have an opportunity to win the game, why don't you try it? I mean, it's worked in college. I mean, granted, it's never worked in the NFL, but you know what? There's a first time for everything, and who's to say that if they charge the line and Peyton bobbles the ball, they recover it, you got your opportunity. Why not try? What difference does it make if you're doing that play on the kneel down or if you're kicking an onside kick? A guy can get hurt on an onside kick, too. So what, you want to quit the onside kick and not even try that?
No, I hear what you're saying. There are, as someone who played the game, who coached the game, there are some things I think you just don't do. There are some things that the chances of success are so low that it is not worth the other side of it.
It's the same thing with an onside kick, though. The chances are...
So you're saying the chances of a successful onside kick are the same as the chances of this winning? You think the chance of an onside kick being successful is the same as the chance of a fumble and then a recovery and a touchdown?
I think the
onside kick probably because that's what you'd have to. That's what you'd have to do.
You know what I'm saying? Though.
Yeah, I hear you, and it's okay. I mean, we can certainly disagree. I just happen to dislike that play, and if I were coaching against him and he ran that play against me, he would see some reserves, and the NFL would have to take action because I would hurt somebody, right? But I'm dirty. I've always been accused of being a dirty coach, so I don't give a shit. But anyway, last question, Jason, and I want to thank you for coming on. I've had a good time. I know we got Steve White lining up here soon.
I said I love Steve White. He's great.
I do too, but I mean, Spent always yells at me because I talk so much about him, so I can't talk too much about him. Plus, Spent is the drinking word in the chat room tonight, and I think everyone's already drunk. So, Super Bowl memory, what was your best one ever? Look back on it. What is the one memory that you look back on and go, that's it?
It's always going to be Rondé's interception in the NFC Championship game for me. It was just one of those things where it was at that moment that everything just came back. You know, all the years of being called the Yuccaneers and the fucking Queers and
all of those really witty things
that they used to call me. And feeling that thrill that, my God, the Buccaneers are going to the Super Bowl. I don't believe this. This is actually going to happen. That is something that I'm never, ever going to forget. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I wrote in the article, I said that every time I see that play on television, you know, they do the replay, I hear Gene, you know, making his call, I start to tear up a little bit because it just brings back all that emotion of that moment that we finally were validated. And, you know, obviously the Super Bowl was an amazing experience as well, but at the same time, it was almost like the dessert to the main course for me.
Because
Philly was that unstoppable barrier that we could never break through, and then when we got through that barrier, it was just amazing.
You know, it's funny, Bucks fan in New York in the chat room just said something that we've talked about before, and it doesn't get said enough. People do not realize how precious an opportunity to win a Super Bowl is. Right, there are guys who will play their entire career who will never, ever get a chance to line up a play in that game. Right, and so when you see these guys who make it to that mountaintop and they donk it off and they don't get the win, and you go, oh, well, next year may never come. The Bucs sure as hell didn't think they weren't going to get back to another Super Bowl the next year. Right, and were it not for some pretty key injuries, we could be talking about that. But it is absolutely amazing the impact that can have, you know. So,
I'll never forget it.
And neither will I. Neither will I. And I'm hoping I get a chance to experience another one because it sure was pretty amazing. So, JC, I want to thank you for coming in here, Bucs Nation. Give people a little word about when they can where they can read more of your stuff.
It's definitely BucsNation.com, and I'm usually doing the previews for the games coming up. I have my things we think we learned from the game, usually on Mondays, and I do a pick segment where I usually do a kind of a funny take on the NFL, so there's some good stuff usually, and of course Sander has all of his content. We have a bunch of other writers that do their contributions as well. So it's a lot of fun. We try to have a lot of fun with it. It's a great site, and I hope Buck fans actually come check us out.
Well, and I believe they will. One thing about the Bucs fans that we associate with is they're not the Bucs fans that aren't buying tickets, right?
Yeah.
They're the Bucs fans that are out there reading. They're voracious in their appetite, and so I'm sure they'll be out there. So a big thank you again to Jason.
And I will be at your tailgate.
Are you going to bring in the lovely wife?
Actually, she had to bail out. She has to go to a recital for my niece, but I'm bringing one of my buddies and my mom. So
It'll be great to see you out there. We'll be starting early, so come on out as early as you want. We'll be doing our thing out there. So Jason, thanks again. We'll have to have you on the show again. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, man. Take care, Jason. JC Della Torre from Bucs Nation. Great stuff. As always, he is coming to the tailgate. He's been to our tailgates before. And the tailgates are really taking on a life of their own. It's kind of exciting. I just hit Steve White up on Twitter to let him know we're ready for him when he's ready. I'm actually talking to another Buck right now, Keith McCants. You guys remember Keith McCants. He's certainly had his struggles, but he's trying to get back into charity work and those sorts of things and trying to get him to come out to the tailgate too. It's amazing how things are starting to spread out, and we're touching a lot of different areas and different people through something as simple as, you know, a big party that, you know, we have a chef who cooks for and amazing drinks and all that stuff. Buck for Life, 3316 West Ohio. If you go to whatthebuck.net/tailgate, you can see all of the information that you would need. Oh, everyone's got jokes now. Everyone's got their jokes now. But at any rate, we'll wait. Steve White will be calling here in a second. We'll talk to him and cover some more details about the Denver Broncos game. Then we'll thank you guys who are over in the chat room. Let's go ahead and do the chat room shout-outs. B. Sizzle, Sander P. from Bucs Nation as well. Sander P.'s been on the show as well. Excellent articles by him on a regular basis. Buck for Life, Spent, Pewter Pirate, Rook, Buckamaniac, Joseph Five, Palmer Lou, Buck You Up, Buck Boy Eliza Dagger, Skip Brown, Chef Red, Monster, Calico Jack, WTB Commish, Axe, Indiana Buck Fan, Bucks Fan New York, Bucks Mafia, and the name winner of the night, Bucktard. One viewer whose name we don't know. Joseph B., I apologize. You know, if you're going to have a name like that, then give me phonetics. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Spence going to go get Steve. Excellent. Well done. It'll be good to have him call in there. It's funny. So I got to tell you guys a story, behind the scenes story, while we're waiting for Steve to call in. If I can get it all in here, I will. You guys know that Josh Freeman's family comes out to the tailgate from time to time, and his family's amazing. Mr. Freeman is amazingly generous with his time, a genuine fan, loves to come out. They came out in the Monsoon game, the first game of the year, didn't give a shit, and was out there having a great time. So we were joking around about getting some security because, literally, he couldn't take a drink or eat a bite of food because people, and that's okay, we're fans, we like to talk to him, it's all good, no one's getting mad about anything, but we would like the folks that come out there to get a chance to have a drink or try some Chef Red's food. And so I told Ron that, Mr. Freeman, I dropped him a note and said, hey, you know, and I told him the joke, and his comment was immediately, you know what, we don't need security, we're just normal people, man, I enjoy coming out of the tailgate. And that thing is absolutely outstanding, to see these folks coming out there and just mingling with all the folks. It is really, really tremendous. So hopefully Spence is going to get a hold of Steve. And confirm where he's at, because we definitely expected him to call in here, so we'll find out what's going on with that. But until then, let's talk a little bit about the Denver Broncos game from my perspective. JC is hanging around to see to listen to Steve, and then he gave me the consolation prize, so thanks, I appreciate that, JC. Anyway, my questions, I started talking about where has the defense been? We'll free call in. You know, it's interesting. The players are... So we had a good run. I'll get into that in a second. But the players used to be a lot more accessible, right? We had a run where we had, I think, what was it, spent 7 weeks, 8 weeks, where we had a different player every week. It was very, very easy. And it was awesome. And now they just really are not allowed to do a lot of that stuff. I mean, they do their obligation shows to 620 and those sorts of stuff. It wasn't back in the Gruden era. It was actually in the Raheem Morris era. It's okay. I'll take the wins over the people on the show. I definitely will. Yeah, we had every draft pick from that season, which was awesome. But at any rate, it's okay. You know, maybe Josh will call in. We know that the guys know who we are. We know that they pay attention, and we know that their family feels comfortable enough coming to the tailgate, so that's pretty cool in my book. Now, in Denver, I was sitting in the stands. One of a pretty decent contingent of Bucks fans, which is funny. I expected to have a very small contingent, but there was a large number of Bucks fans out there, and it's always fun to go to an away game, right? It's always fun to go to an away game because it's almost like you're a Harley driver or a Jeep driver. If you've ever been either one of those and you drive by them on the road and you give them a wave, they have all those secret waves and handshakes and shit. When you go to an away game and you see another Bucks fan, it's like you're a long-lost relative. And so we're out there and we're watching the team go down. And I never felt, like JC said, you know, he felt like at 28-10 we were done. Even in the stands, I never felt like we were done. I was telling the gentleman in front of me, who's a good fan, an informed fan, he thought they were done too. And I was like, listen, you don't understand. This team does not lay down, right? And so as a fan, I was very excited about that. When I went back and watched the game again, it really was not a well-played game by our squad. It wasn't. On the defensive line, we were, like Rook has said and other people have said, we're just not able to generate pressure. We had our singles. Right, even with a quick pass, we had our singles. Gerald McCoy had his single looks. We couldn't beat them enough to get there. You cannot play a team who is a playoff team at something less than your best. You simply can't. And when we talk about Skulls and Swords, and a reminder to you folks who are new, Skulls and Swords are something that we do on a regular basis. Skulls are the bonehead of the game. Now, that doesn't mean they're a bad person. It just means they're the guy that fucked up the most in this game. And the sword is the opposite. It's the guy that did the best in the game. And you have to give it to one person. Each of them to one person. Not the same person. You give them to two different people. If you have to do it, you can give it to a coach, a single coach. But that's the way the rule works. Now, it's funny, Jason in the chat room says first half wasn't bad. Third quarter was dog shite. I absolutely agree. Now, thank you, Rook. Oh, Rook, you have given me renewed faith. I'm going to switch over here so I can see my camera for a second, guys, because I was hoping someone would mention this. You guys know I do the little plus model here. Daquan Bowers, plus 91, plus 91, plus 91. That was on one series. One fucking series, this guy was a beast. An absolute beast. He can't be in shape yet. That's got to be exciting, right? And we've talked about this. I'm not trying to look forward past the end of the year because right now, you know, we got a chance this week to get in here, get a victory on a team that I hope everyone detests. I certainly do, right? But when I look at what this thing can be, do I think he challenges for the start? So it's interesting. It's a good question. I don't know how many plays. Do we have the play chart on this? I think we get a play chart on this. Yeah, here we go. Play time percentage. So let's look at the play time percentage. Where is my man? Bowers. 33 snaps on defense. Where's Tanesham? 54 snaps on defense. So that's a big disparity, right? Well, Bucks Mafia, what we're saying here is we don't know that he's got the lungs at this point. With being out for that injury, we can certainly ask him, and that's what he would do, and he does that from time to time. And Steve has said in the past that you just cannot assume that a guy who's used to putting one hand in the ground, is used to having his moves come off of one edge, can flip over and be the other side. He used to hate it when they would move Bennett over, right? Because you get used to the way your moves are executed against a particular side. Even when they move an end to a tackle, they're typically going to move someone from left end to three technique, or they're going to move. You're going to move him to the point where his moves all feel the same. Bennett has not been playing particularly well lately, guys. I don't know what his grade outs have been from Pro Football Focus, but he hasn't been splashing the way he had in the past. He looks like he's dinged up to me. They haven't announced an injury, but he just doesn't look like himself. Daquan Bowers is playing good football when he's in there. My guess is he's just not ready to go beyond 30 to 40 plays in the game. Now, you really don't have to go much beyond that if your defense is playing well. But the thing that's impressive is what he's doing when he is on the field. Now, that being said, and here's where I want to pull back the myopic side of Bucks Nation, right? He was the worst of his spot last week, according to PFF. Interesting. I haven't had a chance to look at their solid grade out, so... The thing that surprised me is how quickly folks have jumped off the Leonard Johnson ship. Now, I don't know why it surprises me. This is one of those things that shouldn't surprise me, because as fans, quite often, we are amazingly reactionary, right? I remember not too long ago, this guy was, who needs a key to leave? We got Leonard Johnson. Hey, there's my man, Steve White. Hey, Steve, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good, good. We were wondering if you got pulled into a Grinch or, you know, something like that episode.
Nah, I just had some technical difficulties.
That happens, man. I had some at the beginning, too. It's all good. It's all good. So welcome to the show. Steve White's joining us here on What the Buck. You guys know Steve. He's a regular with us. We enjoy his commentary and his insight and the fact that he's not afraid to call a spade, which we're going to do a little bit of tonight. Steve, we went out to Denver, played a team that is sort of hitting on all cylinders right now with a quarterback who knows how to do what he does. Did the Bucks play schematically what you expected them to do, and what's your overall take on how we played against Denver?
Well, we tried to outsmart Peyton Manning, which in and of itself is probably not the way you want to go anyway. But what we were trying to do is not show him anything.
Right.
So, you know, before the snap, we just lined up, and then if we were going to blitz or something like that, or we were going to change coverages, we kind of did it on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you do stuff on the fly, it doesn't always work out the way you want it to.
Right.
Obviously. And so, you know, Peyton was for most of the game, was able to pick us apart, basically. And, you know, the beginning of the game, we were getting some decent pressure, but he was getting the ball off so fast. So a couple of times, guys were getting clean wins and couldn't even touch him before he got the ball off and had a completion going. So you know, we did have the one interception by Levante, and, you know, a little bit of pressure here and there, but for the most part, it was just a clinic. You know, he just put on a clinic and, you know, took what we gave him and just marched up and down the field.
Now, one of the things that the announcers were talking about, and that, you know, the Bucks seem to be, and I didn't go watch the coaches' film. I watched the condensed version when I watched it again. We didn't come out of that too deep as often as we had been doing in the past. It seemed like we were relatively content to stay there and let Peyton try and pick us apart underneath. And what he did was essentially pick us apart underneath, which is never good. What did you see out of our linebackers in coverage, and what can you attribute that to? Is it one of those things where when you're playing these sorts of mind games, if he's smarter than you are, he's just going to win. There's nothing you can really do. Or were there things that you saw that our guys may have screwed up a little bit on that need to go back to the drawing board on?
Well, you know, a couple of times, the thing that the question I have is, are we playing zone defense the same way as we used to? Because it doesn't appear that way.
Right.
You know, on cover two, corner's supposed to get a reroute, try to reroute the wide receiver inside, or if he tries to take an outside route, you know, widen him real far out to take some of the stress off of our safety. But then after he gets the reroute, he's supposed to look for anything coming out to the flat and widen with it. Nothing really is supposed to get outside of him, per se.
Mm-hmm.
But our corners are kind of locking on to the wide receiver, and so, you know, you got a slot receiver who's doing a quick out, and he's wide open because whether it be the linebacker or the nickelback, it's not chasing that guy out to the flat. The corner's supposed to come up and make that play. You know, you give him 5 yards or what have you, but he's not supposed to be able to catch that ball and then turn up the sideline. That's
right.
Just not really supposed to happen. And it happened a few times. And it was kind of breakdowns like that here and there in the zone defense when we weren't. And then, of course, you know, my, you know, from since early in the year, how we blitz, but we allow our corners to, you know, let guys run inside routes. that's the easiest pass a quarterback can make. If you let the wide receiver inside and start blitzing so there's nobody underneath to obstruct you,
yeah,
you just rear back and throw it right to that guy. And so those kind of things made it a little bit harder on us coverage-wise, I thought. Obviously, after a strong start, Leonard Johnson is kind of, you know, he's getting baptized right.
Yeah. You can't be too mad at him. That's the funny part. I mean, we tend to be so binary. He's either the next great corner in the league, and, you know, watch out Revis Island, or he's a garbage can, and it's rarely the case that's true.
No, it's just these are learning experiences. You know, you go against one of the best quarterbacks, and Demaryius Thomas is an emerging big play guy at wide receiver, and that guy, you know, gave him fits at one point in the game. And so the thing to take from it, though, is that we kept fighting.
Right.
So we kind of got bulldozed in that third quarter, man. It was just everything went downhill fast. You know, what's that Ron Burgundy said in the movie? Boy, that escalated fast.
Yeah.
but guys kind of kept plugging away and trying – fighting as best they could to stay in it. It just didn't go our way.
Well, and you know, we talked a little bit before you joined us about the team. One of the most impressive things about this team is they haven't been out of a game. And while they may have, a team has gone ahead, like the Broncos went ahead, and we had J.C. Della Torre on from Bucks Nation earlier, and he was like, you know, at 28-10, I legitimately thought the game was over, right? And this team has never laid down this season. And admittedly, it was a hell of a long shot, right? Anytime you rely on an onside kick, you fucked up somewhere, right? Because that sucks.
Right.
But still, but yet and still, as the Reverend would say, we had a chance. And the game didn't quit. Now, I got to ask you a question. Early in the season, I mean, Levante Davis playing terrific, I think. I'm impressed with him. Yeah, there's little things he's doing here and there that suck, you know, he's still a missed tackle here and there, but his instincts are looking great. Mason Foster early in the year was really impressive to me for whatever reason, and now I have to go back and rewatch the games to figure out why. but it seems like he's sort of disappeared. What are you seeing out of the linebacking core? And you don't have to limit it to those two, but what are you seeing out of that linebacker core before we switch to the front line?
Well, with Mason, I think he's still making some plays. I don't think he's really getting noticed as much because of the blitz. A lot of times he's, you know, when we aren't blitzing and we're playing Tampa 2, he's a deep man down the middle. So if you hear about him, you know, it's a good chance it's because they threw the ball over his head. But some of it is just seems much. You know, I feel like, especially like play action stuff, he bites on play action like nobody. And so if you do a play action fake, and he runs up, and the guy runs right by him. And so I feel like early in the year, he was a little bit better with his keys and seeing a little, you know, we had a see a little, see a lot. If you focus in on your keys, they'll generally take you to the ball. But if you're trying to guess or you're trying to see everything, then you get confused and just, you know, start going in the wrong direction. And so I think he kind of needs to just get back to seeing a little bit, to see a lot. Be a little bit more patient, I would say, because he's got the speed and the quickness that when he recognizes it to take off and go and make a play. I just feel like he's trying to do too much at once right now.
You know, it's funny you just dropped a phrase that I hadn't heard in a long time, and I threw it in the chat room. See a little to see a lot, and it's powerful, right? You cannot, when you're playing your position, be looking at the whole damn field. It just doesn't work.
Right.
And it's funny because the more comfortable guys get, I think the more natural they start to feel, the more likely they feel like they can stretch. It's almost like it's a natural part of the learning curve, right? At the beginning, you're so focused on what you're trying to do that you don't fuck up that way, right? You may screw up your individual assignment, but you're not going to screw up looking at the world view. Then all of a sudden, you're doing your assignment pretty well, and you start going, what's going on over there?
Right. You start trying to do other people's jobs.
Absolutely.
Or guessing or both. And,
yeah.
And that's when you kind of run into trouble, because now you're running in the A-gap, and that's now your A-gap, for instance. Or, you know, you got Tampa 2, and you're trying to run downhill on a play fake, when you got to be, you know, playing, thinking pass first and then come back up.
Right.
So it's those kind of things I think he just has to kind of focus back on. Once again, a lot of it, too, is just Levante Davis making so many plays, sometimes you got to be the first guy there. And so if you're not, you know, maybe he's in position to make the play, but Levante makes it right before he does. So he's also a victim of that also sometimes.
Well, it's funny, man, because I'm not ready to say goodbye to the season yet and talk about how great the next season looks, because I just don't do that. But there are some things that are getting done, and there was a particular play that Levante David made. It was in the fourth quarter, I think. They tried to run off left tackle, and Levante David came out of nowhere. He may have come from the bench for all I know. I don't know where the hell he came from. And he flew in and grabbed a guy by the shoulder pads and threw him into the ground like a damn...
Yeah, that was an impressive play. Because, you know, it wasn't an easy tackle to begin with, because it was kind of like he had to go around the end and then come back in to try to make the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of guys have had an arm tackle in that situation and the running back runs through it. Yeah, I had to rewind it a couple of times on the coaching stage to see, because I'm not quite sure how he did that,
no,
to be quite honest with you. I don't know if the running back's feet got tangled up too, or he just found some kind of power-up button on the field. I mean, he literally just grabbed a guy and flung him down hard,
yeah,
on his back in one motion. And, you know, I like the kid and everything, but I hadn't seen that out of him before.
Yeah, he'd been tackling, but he hadn't been violent.
Play. When you described it, I knew exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Because like you said, he's been flashing, but there are guys that flash because they're efficient. There are guys that flash because you look at it, you get that, ooh, every once in a while.
Right, it's explosive.
Yeah, yeah, so that was good. So you got a chance to watch the coach's tape. Let me stop trying to limit what you say. Give us what you saw on the coach's tape. Are we taking steps forward or are we taking steps backwards?
Well, I just think that we ran up against a guy and a team that's playing pretty well right now. You know, I kind of told you about that Von Miller guy, and he did not disappoint. You know, some things that I felt like, and it's hard to second guess running backs, but I thought a couple of times, I'm not sure that Doug Martin trusted his instincts this game. Like, you could almost see him about to make a cut where there's a seam, but he kind of, you know, he stops and then he goes back, or he, you know, hesitates a little bit where he hadn't been hesitating, you know, 3 weeks ago when he was really ripping guys. And, you know, it's a testament to him that he was still able to make yards on some of those plays because, you know, he would be hesitating in the backfield and it looked like they had him dead to rights. And he would still kind of spurt through there for two or three, but the difference is three weeks. So he was getting 10, 15 yards on that play instead of just the two or three.
Right.
So, you know, I felt like an offensive line, you know, they were trying, but not really some great results there. Sometimes guys just were, you know, they run into each other, wrong blocking, guys busting on who's supposed to block who, that kind of thing. And that also filtered down to Freeman, where once again he's getting a whole lot of pressure, and it's hard to operate a quarterback under those kind of conditions. I think he still played pretty well. He had to take six Irish. But, man, it's hard to play quarterback back there when guys, you know, you get on that last step of your drop back, and here comes a guy trying to get you out the void.
Yeah.
So on offense, I just felt like, you know, we had some opportunities there. We just kind of shot ourselves in the foot. And man, those penalties really killed us. It's amazing how many times they call stuff on us. But on the other hand, you know, Denver's offensive line, and I hate, you know, make excuses at all, but the offensive line was getting away with murder sometimes. As far as holding and obvious holding and stuff like that, they don't get it called, and we can call for what I feel like are some ticky-tack calls. And you know, they cost us some, at least a couple of big plays. So we had a time in the NFL, to me, and I've watched and noticed over the last few weeks, you get a holding call, man, it's hard to make a first down on this drive after that.
Yeah, that screws up your down and distance, definitely.
Yeah, that's pretty much a drive killer. And so we had several of those hands-to-the face, stuff of that nature. They're really kind of, when we were getting it going, all of a sudden, here we have a holding penalty, and so instead of it being first and 10 again, it's, you know, first and 20 or second and 20. And it's hard to get that yardage back. Up front, you know, we tried to do some different things, like I said, I don't know what you call it when you just, you know, line up in front of Peyton Manning, like, you know, that's going to confuse him or something, but we tried a few of those things. I felt like early on I thought our pressure was really getting there. I think as the game went on, I don't know if guys got wore down with the altitude or what, but I didn't feel like our pass rush was as good later on in as it was the way we started off. And, you know, if you press Peyton, we all know what's going to happen. So, you know, we're fine. We got young corners. Leonard Johnson out there, you know, against Harris Thomas, how to get up. That's who came out there. And so that guy did better. He's going to keep fighting him. And hopefully these last games, he will win one of those battles we did the last few weeks. But I feel like we didn't take a step back. That third quarter is just what did it. I mean, kind of that snowball. It's kind of the snowball effect from last year, except for the fact that we still find ways to make plays in the fourth quarter. But you remember how last year we were talking about how that snowball effect would happen at some point in the game, and then everything would go wrong all at once?
Yep.
That's what happened in the third quarter, man. We got a pretty good game going. You know, we're fight in it, and then the sledgehammer comes down. And all of a sudden, like, we're down 28-10.
Yeah, it was amazing how fast that happened.
Yeah,
right?
It really was. It really was.
I mean,
it's just like, bam. You know, you're almost like stunned. Like, you're a boxer in there, you're Mike Tyson, and all of a sudden you get punched in the face and like, whoa, what just happened?
Well, and what's funny is if you look at it, sometimes the data just jumps out at you, right? So they win the toss and they pull us and they defer, which is fine, okay. they get the ball at the half, which is going to be as good as our defense is going to be in the second half, right? Because we've talked about it before. Our defense is thin, right? We need rest, and now we're at 5,280 feet. That's going to just be exacerbated. So they come out and they force a punt. Okay, so what do? Three and out. Shit. Okay, so they only need to go 36 yards to score. They get a touchdown. What do? How about two and out on an interception? How about that? We'll just do that real quick, right? And it just got worse and worse. I mean, Lavonte David's pick stopped the bleeding.
It really did. Had we been able to get that onside kick and somehow, some way, come back and win that game, that would have been the turning point of the game.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, up to that point, I feel like watching the tape, especially even the times when we stopped him, it was more Peyton kind of stopping himself.
Yeah.
You know, he had as great as he is, he had some guys open that he didn't hit on the times we got some three and outs or on some times when we got off on third down. So, you know, that was the time where I felt like we actually made a play to get off on third down, and it was also a play to get the ball back in good position for our offense to score. But for that, who knows what their score would have been.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, it's very, very true. So, you know, it's you learn from it, you move forward. I think it's good from a maturation perspective as the team to be able to look at that film. I was happy that I didn't see Sheridan. I was talking to JC about this. We never seemed to get to the point where Sheridan went, oh, shit, I'm going to pull the ripcord, and we're going to leave Mark Barron out there by himself to look like a tool, and we're going to throw the kitchen sink at these guys. But I did see your favorite defensive tackle stunt show up again.
Yep. It's not going away. I've accepted it. I didn't even do the blog post about it because I just accepted that this is who we are. You know, who knows if there'll be changes in the offense. But off season, but that's who we are, man. We run these crazy stunts that don't work and just keep running them, I guess, and hope that one day, somehow, some way, they'll work. You know, and that's who we are. It works out okay sometimes, and then it's not so okay sometimes. We had a little run where we blitzed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there were times where, I mean, there's literally two guys wide open. And Peyton, for whatever reason, tries to go to the third guy who's open but not quite as open, and then maybe that guy drops the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he, you know, got a little bit of pressure and throws it a little high.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there was time, trust me, when you watch the coaches say, you're going to see Mark Barron where he could have gotten close to the game. Along with everybody else, not to pick on him.
Sure.
Everybody kind of took turns, who guys run about. But thankfully, you know, Peyton didn't quite find those guys some of the time. He did find some, but just not all of them. So, I don't think, and I said last week, I didn't feel like we should do that anyway, you know, all that. But I don't even think Peyton kind of gives you the opportunity to do that with the way that we tried to come after him this week. You know, the whole lineup in it.
Right.
Situation, it's kind of hard to pick. We tried it. We did have a guy come from like 12 yards deep on the snap to try to blitz. Didn't really work out well. Didn't really even sniff the quarterback. But we did try, but it's hard to do when you're trying to have your safeties at, you know, regular depth and then
walk them up.
Have your corner. We tried to send Biggers again. He was not really interested in coming off the edge, though, but, you know, trying to have him coming from the wide receiver instead of inching in before the snap, that's just not a real good recipe for pressure, in my opinion. But we tried it. It was a little bit harder to see, and, you know, we even had another one of those six-man blitzes that didn't come close to Peyton. But we didn't do quite as much, and you know, I felt like that was the right way to go. Even though we didn't get the pressure I was hoping we would get, I still felt like, you know, make him, even though it's Peyton Manning, make him work his way down the field instead of giving up the big one.
Right.
Probably the only thing I was really disappointed in was that long pass interference on Leonard Johnson. I'm not sure if he was supposed to play inside or outside of Demaryius Thomas on that play. I kind of think he was supposed to play inside, and that's what got him in trouble. some kind of way he let him inside, and then he felt like he had to get back inside of him.
Right.
So he's grabbing him and all that. I'm not even sure Demaryius Thomas would have caught that ball.
Yeah.
If he doesn't interfere with him. But that was that big play that, you know, we gave up. It wasn't a catch, but it was a pass interference, which, you know, might as well have been, because he scored, I think, play. But other than that, you know, we gave up passes and stuff like that, but we came up and hit guys. And that's all you can ask for when you're playing a guy like Peyton, who just, you know, he sleeps. You know, when he in his sleep, he's thinking of ways to carve up.
You know, it's funny, Jason, J.C. De La Torre in the chat room just mentioned the touchdown to Demaryius Thomas where he about threw it under Leonard Johnson's underarm.
Yeah. I mean, that was just a perfect throw. What are you going to do?
And Lynch said it on the broadcast. He's like, it's good coverage. I mean, what the hell do you want him to do?
I saw it coming, too, because he had his head around.
Yep.
But it's still good coverage. It's very few people that's going to get their head around fast enough to see that ball.
Yeah.
But he's in perfect position. That guy was better than your guy that day.
Yeah, and there are very few quarterbacks who are going to say, you know what, I don't give a shit. I'm throwing this.
Exactly. It's about 1.5 to lead of quarterback wouldn't have even attempted that throw.
And it's funny. So here we got Calico Jack, who's a pragmatist, a very, very even-keeled in the chat room, making a comment about the throw to Dallas Clark by Freeman on his touchdown pass was very similar in narrow window opportunity. I think the difference.
Dallas had some outstanding throws. The one he fits in on cover two to Vincent Jackson, where the guy blows up Vincent Jackson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He puts it in there for that pass. And I think it was another pass to Dallas Clark where it was a small window as well. He had some outstanding passes, too. But, man, listen, I wouldn't have wanted to be him back there trying to keep one eye on the rush and one eye on the guy downfield. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting to see. Now, Steve, you know this is a favorite part of the show for you because you always hate doing it, and I like to watch you squirm a little bit. We're going to go to Skulls and Swords. Reminder, Swords the good one, Skulls the bad one. You get one. Who are you weighing in with?
My sword, Levante Davis, you know, just that play was one of the bigger plays in the game. Even though we didn't come back to win, We needed a play right there, and he made it. Along with a lot of other players throughout the course of the game. My skull. My skull is probably going to go to Leonard Johnson.
Right.
You know, he had a rough time out. Honorable mention to DeMar Dawson. I feel terrible about because I really think him a couple weeks ago.
Right.
But, you know, it wasn't even necessarily his fault. I want to call some of those calls on him, but, you know, he had a bunch of calls go against him that stalled drive, and that's kind of the knock we had on the guy who used to star.
Yeah, I remember that guy.
Him. And so, you know, I feel terrible because he played well in flash. I mean, he blocked up Von Miller a few times perfectly, but he just, you know, too many penalties, too many times where he didn't block the guy. He gives up the sack, you know, a fumble sack. And so he's an honorable mention. But Leonard Johnson, you know, because he was one of those guys who in cover two let the guy outside of him for whatever reason on the out route, either he pass and get up the field. You know,
right.
You let him get him, but you don't let him fill up the sideline. It's not supposed to happen. And so, you know, 1A, B, whatever you want.
Well, yeah, 1A, 1B. Yeah. That's fair. All right. Well, Steve, I want to thank you for joining us again. Did you ever figure out if you're going to be able to make it to the game with it being a reunion game and all the people going to be out there? Or are you going to stay home in West Chapel?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stay home. You know how it is, man. You know, those guys, my hat's off to them. I probably will actually see some of those guys throughout the course of this week. But, you know, it's their time to really celebrate the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, I wasn't here for it.
Right.
I'm still a little bit salty about it, naturally.
Understandable.
But I'm very happy for those guys and have that the team is choosing to celebrate them again, and I'll be cheering them on from the couch.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of these damn days, I'm going to send someone out and pick your ass up at Mr. Chapel and bring you to the tailgate. But we appreciate you coming on the show regardless, and I'm sure we'll be tweeting back and forth during the game, Steve. Thanks again, as always, for joining us. Have a good time, and let me know what Christmas special is coming on so I don't miss it.
All right.
All right, man. Take care. All right, Steve White, ladies and gentlemen, as always, full of information. And he hates the Skulls and Swords, too, because it's really tough to really put yourself on the line and pick that one person. Though I think the ones he picked, Levante David, it's funny. I actually, when I was going back and doing my Skulls and Swords, forgot about the pick. Somehow I forgot the interception because I didn't have him as my sword, and I think it's a legit pull. But I'm not going to change it now. Damn all that. I'm not changing this. We're going to hit the Skulls and Swords that are over on the Facebook page and see what you guys have said along those lines. I know that Spen had put that over there. There's another drink for you, ladies and gentlemen. Where are the Skulls and Swords? Two, 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 two. That's the only downside is this thing scrolls. Oh, it's not that bad then. All right. Let me see here. All right, Peter Roy, sword. Rondé Barber, for once again proving he can play like someone 10 years younger than he is, a skull to Josh Freeman, ! Bob Ripperton, sword. Rondé, skull to Dotson, too many holding calls. John Pomerleau, sword to Levante Davis, Duke and Ball, skull to Mike Bennett for lack of making any kind of big impact on Manning when he really had to step up for the young secondary. Kevin Sarazen, how can you say skull for Freeman? Oh, this is another argument about that. Okay. He's going to actually do... Skull should be the O-line if you know anything about football. I love when people yell that much, which is awesome. Sword for Mike Williams and Levante David, and then he proceeds to break the rules. So, Kevin, spend less time arguing with the other guy's call and more time following the rules. Richard Griffin, skull for Dotson, sword to Dallas Clark. Adam Wayne Fleming, skull to John Lynch for still carrying that chip on his shoulder against the Bucks. Peter Roy is defending himself. Dave Mega Dave Pratt, skull to Dotson, sword to McCoy. Even with double man, he still gets a step or two in the pocket. He's a beast. Joseph B., that I now pronounce correctly, skull goes to Sully for failing to account for Miller. He worked us. Sword for Levante, first interception. Joe Beatty, skull Dotson, sword Levante. Not as many skulls and swords over on the Facebook page this time. You guys, is Nemo Bucktard? I don't know. It's interesting, though. We'll hit Freeman haters in a second. Rook, relax. We got Indiana Buck fan Freeman and David. Not sure what the order is. WTB Commission giving random stats. His interception was terrible. It was knuckleheaded terrible. But it's interesting, right? It's very tough for me to. I don't think Josh had his best game, certainly. But when you have as many upsides during a game as you have downsides like that, it's tough to go after him. So my skull and my sword, I'm going to give my sword to Mike Williams. Because Mike Williams was a beast in this game. Vincent Jackson got locked down. I don't quite understand why. I'll hit that too. Thanks, Ben. I'll get back over and do that. I don't think that Vince Jackson was as locked down as people led him on to be. Because I'm going to take him... one-on-one. I'm going to take him in man, even with Champ Bailey. I don't care. That guy is a machine. I'm not going to necessarily check it down to Taquan Underwood as often when he's dropping the ball so much, and that tells you who my skull is. We were talking about Taquan Underwood. I know if Bucko Pat was in there, he'd be saying, get Preston Parker back in here, or any other FSU guy that he can think of. Taquan Underwood played a really bad game. And I know it seems odd to go after both receivers, but when you look at the offense, which had been sort of saving our bacon, they couldn't effectively move the ball down the field because the checkdowns weren't successful. There was a great opportunity a number of times. I don't know how many times he got targeted. I've got the stats here somewhere. It probably wasn't that much. But there were times where it just killed us when Josh would make the checkdown, make the right read, make the throw, deliver it. And why is it these are not in order? And why is it they don't have page numbers? Someone get me the stats, please. He probably only got targeted four times. I don't know. Something like that. Anyway, Lawrence Dossey. Nice reference. Anyway, I don't care. So those are my swords and my skulls. Let me hit the what the buck were you thinking, and then we will continue to have this conversation about the Bucks and the Broncos. And we'll talk a little bit about the Eagles, too. Where is my what the buck were they thinking? Facebook just sucks balls. I'm sorry, but I can't find a damn thing in this son of a bitch anymore. I know that what the buck were they thinking has a gigantic graphic. There we go. All right, what the buck were they thinking? Michael Singleton. Sorry, but the defensive secondary is terrible. Injury and suspension bugs hit us hard. Christian Helm, no pressure on Manning. Who did they think they were going up against? Charlie Batch, who got a victory this weekend, by the way. So that would have sucked, too. Broncos are the better team, fair and square, says Bill Matul. And that's the guy who I was referring to. Like I said, very pragmatic. He's the one who said that we were going to get blown out, though, and that wasn't the case. And that's okay. Brian Dory, running out close to 2 minutes of clock time at the end of the first half. A little too comfortable with that three-point lead there, don't you think, Shiano? We all knew Peyton was going to come out swinging in the second half. We should have used our high-power big play offense to try to get some kind of points before the half. When you play, quote, not to lose against better teams, you usually do. I adore Brian Dory. I think he knows a tremendous amount of football, but I think that's absolute horseshit. You do not try and take risks in the shadow of your own goalpost before the half. And Shane Crabtree, who thinks that Brian Dory nailed it, I totally disagree. That's okay. Adam Boyd, 3rd and 20, draw play to DJ Ware, gains about 5 yards. Get used to that. That was the play I actually called it in the stadium. Daniel Gonzalez, what the fuck were they thinking? They're taking their foot off the gas for halftime. Again, I don't think you guys understand how risky it is to try and take those chances when you're back there going into halftime and the Broncos getting the ball after the half. Right? You throw a pick six there, you give them another cheap 3 points, and all of a sudden they're coming in with all the momentum. Too conservative play calling killed us. It's like the coaching staff's afraid to let the offense loose. I really don't see where that's true. How many runs do we have? I need to find that damn page of this fucking printout because everything I want to talk about is on that page, and instead I've got 700 pages of other bullshit that I don't care about. This is going to piss me off so badly because I managed to somehow go to the middle and not get to the page I want. Here we go. There's a drive chart. That's what I was want. So, we had 21 runs, 18 for Doug Martin, and 39 attempts. Now, I suspect if I looked at that first half, the bounce is going to be better. Let's see. Doug Martin had 15 of his 18 carries in the first half. And Josh Freeman had 14 attempts. So we were balanced in the first half. Now, okay, now here's where I'm going to cheat, guys. And I'm going to go ahead and warn you because Calico Jack will call me out on this if I don't, right? First half, playing well. We have the lead. Balanced attack. 15 runs, 48 yards. Nothing spectacular, but we're chipping away. 14 attempts, 8 completions. We come back in the second half. In total runs, we go from 16 to 21, 5 more runs, and then we throw the ball all over the damn field. Now, admittedly, when you're playing from behind, that kind of shit happens, right? But there's a chicken and egg discussion that we could most certainly have there. All right. If it was porn, you'd find it. It's true, I would, but I found this too. Maybe it would be on the same page if it were porn. I don't know. What else we have in here? Alicia Geddes Greco. Seemed like Shiano felt like our offense being out there running down the clock was better than scoring fast and getting off the field. He thought he could win by just keeping running off the field. Can't win playing in fear, even though justifiable with our horrible second. So here's the thing, guys. Before the game, to a man and a woman, that's actually non-gender specific use of man, I don't think anyone disagreed with the idea of trying to control the clock. The last thing you want is Peyton Manning out there running up and down the field. So if you can have sustained drives, keep Manning off the field and score, that's fine, right? Which is what I thought we tried to do in the first half. So, and again, I mean, you're going to get quick scores. And damn pick sixes, boy, they throw the whole damn thing off kilter, right? But anyway, I just think we abandoned too much. I also think that when you're going against a pass rush like that, that third quarter was making me sick. I tweeted about it, I think. When they started to pin their ears back, I'm not the guy who then tries to throw when the guys are starting to get their vibe. But I said that before the game. There wouldn't have been any mystery about what I was going to do with Von Miller and Elmas Dumervil. There's going to be a crackback and a toss sweep, and I'm going to beat the living shit out of those ends. Right? That's what's going to happen. And we'll send them the playbook. Right? Because you better start looking over your shoulder because there's going to be a receiver coming in. Vincent Jackson's going to try and ear hole you. But we didn't do that. Not to say that we would have won had we done that, right? It's not that simple, and I'm not that arrogant. But, all right, let's get to the rest of these what the buck were they thinkings. Jamie Sinfield, playoffs, we're not good enough, people, plain and simple. In regards to the end of the first half, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, though foresight into the third quarter would have been nice. 3 scores covering something like 110 yards. We have some issues. Peter Roy, every real Bucks fan should be happy with our new and improving team. Still problems to fix, but at least the team isn't giving up anymore. We should be happy the Bucks have been able to keep games close and not get blown out. Regardless, it's a better record than last season. Well, and that's fine, right? I think that the problem is if you're happy with mediocrity, then why ever go? So, now we're going to transition to Rook's topic, because I think we should talk about it. Then we'll talk a little bit about the Eagles, because I don't think we're going to get any argument in this room about how much we all hate the Eagles. And I love the Eagles not playing very good football right now. I would love to see us do a Kansas City on the Eagles. I would love to watch our team beat the shit out of them. I hate the Falcons, too. I don't have to just hate one team. I can hate both of them. Or both of them, as my friend says. But I don't understand, Rook, what the Freeman hate is. Do I think he had his best game? No, I don't. But, and the problem is, Rook, I really need to actually plan to use your emails before show, because now I only have email up. What I think I may do is, Rook, how about this? Rook, will you take your emails that you wrote to me and actually write a blog post? If you'd like to, if you want to do this, I'd love to have you make your case in a blog entry on What the Buck. Send me an email at oldschool@whatthebuck.net. I'll create you an account. And let's get this thing out there with what you broke down in that email. How about that? Because I'm just not doing a good job, and I don't think it carries very well in the show. And I don't think that there's a lot of people that come to this show that are in the camp anymore anyway that Josh is the problem. Now, was Josh getting hit in this game? Yeah. I mean, the offensive line is patchwork. He certainly was getting some pressures. I'm not sure what the numbers were. Do we like RoboSack Johnson? I don't know. Typically, Bucks fans like whatever quarterback's not playing when you're losing, right? It's a typical thing where it's the most popular guy is the backup quarterback. What was I going to look up? How many pressures we got? I'll tell you in a second, even though I have to highlight it because their stupid formatting makes it red on gray. According to Pro Football Focus, we had 0 sacks, 1 hit, 7 hurries, no batted passes. That is terrible. The Broncos on the other side had 1 sack, 5 hits, and 16 hurries. 5 hurries by Derek Wolf. And you may say to yourself, who? And I would say, fuck if I know. Because he had more hurries than Von Miller, though Von Miller had a hit and a sack to add to it and 4 tackles. But, at any rate, Old School just got replaced with a Christmas star. That's 4 on Christmas. Nice. he did get clobbered on the pick 6, but that pass was terrible anyway. And yes, Dan Orlovsky is popular. I sat in our stadium and listened to people behind me calling for Dan Orlovsky. And here's the funny part, guys. I actually like Dan Orlovsky. I think he's a terrific backup. I have no issue with him as a backup. I just don't want him as my starter. You know when you put a backup in? When your starter's broken. I just don't care. I just don't get it. No, he's not terrific because he never sees the field. I think he's terrific because I like the way the guy plays football. Oh, yeah, he stepped out of the back of the end zone. I get it. Blah, 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 blah. Right? But I like what the guy's got. But at any rate, let's talk about the Eagles a little bit. And Rook, I'm serious about this. You know how to send me email. If you don't want to do the... if you don't want to actually do the posting, if you've never worked with WordPress, let me know, and I'll work with you to get that done. But I would like you to actually make your case, because I've been having this conversation about Josh Freeman for a while, and I've been getting shit saying I'm a homer and all that sort of stuff because I like Josh and I like his family. You guys know full and damn well I could like his family, and if he played like garbage, I'd say he played like garbage. Right? But, that being said, I would like to get you a platform for your article, Rook. So, I do not think he got rattled. Josh does not seem to do that. But, and that is, in fact, exactly why we're not featured at McDitton's. Though, we are going to be able to put our banner up there, and they would love for us to make a significant appearance December 18th. Chris called me today, and definitely wants to What the Buck Nation, or family, or whatever the fuck we call ourselves out there. So, Commissions weighed in. He did get rattled. He got rattled. All right. Whatever. It's just dick measuring at this point. No, he didn't. How's that? I have a microphone. You don't. So I don't think he got rattled. But I did. I know, Buck for Life, you caught me. Fuck you. I say that affectionately, Buck for Life. I did say it, and I caught myself and said family, because I hate that What the Buck Nation shit. But at any rate, thank you very much, exactly. All right, Eagles, this week, here's what we got going on. It's 10:34. We haven't broken down the Eagles. We know a couple things about the Eagles. They are not the team they used to be. They're firing people left and right. Andy Reid probably already has his shit packed. Nick Foles? Really? Really? This is a game that is tailor-made. Tailor-made for us to beat the shit out of them. Leslie says she wants to see Free Scramble more, and then when he decides to run, run. I don't know. I'm not displeased with when he runs. He's certainly not pulling the Peyton Manning, who bitched out tremendously on the first scramble and then towed the line for about six yards before throwing an incompletion, and then did it again and was fortunate enough to hit Knowshon Moreno while he laid on his back. Calico Jack says Nick Foles is better than Mike Vick. I don't think either one of them are particularly good. I don't think the Eagles are very good. I think they are imploding. That being said, they still have talent. They are still an NFL team, and we don't ever look past any NFL team. Now, from a tailgate perspective, we're actually going to have a lot of Eagles fans at the tailgate, and not the Eagles fans that throw batteries at Santa, not the Eagles fans who kick little children when they're down, right? Some Eagles fans that are legit fans like our people are, right? And while you can hate the team, hating the fans, if they're not those guys that throw batteries is kind of dumb. So we've got Sean Young, a fellow Hall of Fame member coming down. I sent the video out there, which is tremendous. And we've got a couple of other people that are coming out there that are going to be awesome. Now, rumor has it that Booger McFarland's coming out to the tailgate. We thought Mike Pittman was coming out. We haven't heard back from him. We may have a couple of other folks out there, which would be tremendous. Spent thinks that Sean Young is not ugly. He's very short, Spent. You're not going to like him. But if they're from Tampa Bay, make them drink twice. I like it. Sapp's probably not coming out there. Oh, Pittman's dad is sick, says Calico. That's something that we had heard from Roman as well. So we'll find out. He's diagnosed with cancer. Oh, geez, oh, Pete. Okay. Okay. So we'll send our thoughts and prayers out to those guys with regards to that. So we'll see. We'll see what's going out there. Sean's out because he's short, yeah. Okay, I didn't see that. So, at any rate, the reality is it should be an amazing tailgate. So make sure you get out there. We've got all kinds of charity work that's going on as well that Spence's been dropping in the chat room. We talked about the Vincent Jackson thing going on December 18th. We've also got a watch party coming up, yeah? We've got a watch party coming up for the New Orleans Saints game. That we're going to be doing. We have the Ryan Neese event this Thursday night. If you could drop the link in for that as well. That's an event. I won't be able to go to that, sadly. But it should be a good time. So pay attention to a couple of places, if you could. There are a couple of things we're trying to do that are a little bit different. It's Quaker Steak and Lube for the watch party for the Saints game. We should have a large contingent out there. I am not going to New Orleans for the first time in, I think, 5 years. My schedule is just not going to allow it, which means that I'll actually be out there at Quaker Steak and Lube, if that matters. But we should have a good time out there regardless of who is there. New website is up. There's still some things we got to get fixed up. If you haven't signed up to the mailing list, do that. We're going to start trying to do a newsletter. I'm still looking for people for content. If you like to write, if you have an opinion, if you take time to actually do some research, I would love to find some of those folks. Guys like Brian Dory, Drew Hamilton, terrific. We'd love to get those guys writing a lot more often. So the webpage is over there in the chat room. Follow us on Twitter, whatthebuck.net, or twitter.com/whatthebuck, facebook.com/whatthebuck. With that, did I have fun in Denver? I did, Leslie. I had a great time. The city was amazing. The stadium was amazing. It sucked to lose, but it was awesome as an away fan to go to. And I can certainly babble on about it. Jason, I'd love to have you write, brother, but you're otherwise encumbered. I figured they had you on some sort of exclusivity contract. But if not, and Sander won't come firebomb my house, I would love to have you write for the site. So, you know, if you want to talk to me offline about that, we'll get you an author profile, get you a login, and we'll get you a platform, an additional platform, because you've already got plenty of platforms. So for those of you who want to do more of the things that I do next year, away games, start saving your money, guys. I want to tell you, this is going to be a little bit of a diatribe. I'll be happy for $1 million. Nice. I love it. Everyone's got a price, right? if you enjoy going to football games here, and I love the stadium, don't get me wrong, and I love the home fans, you will absolutely love going to away games. Denver was a very clean city. People were astonishingly friendly regardless of where we went. So the organized trip still exists. So those things get run by a group called Buck Fan Tours. Dennis Pfeiffer runs Buck Fan Tours, does a great job. I normally, when I go to away games, use his tours. He had to cancel a number of them this year because there just wasn't enough demand. In order to make that stuff work, you have to have enough people in order to get the cost down so that it makes sense. And so the sooner you sign up, like, he'll have a deposit thing where you set a deposit. And once he gets the deposits, he can lock him in. Now, the beauty of Buck Fan Tours, and I'm not shilling for him because I have any financial stake, because I don't. I've been on his tours. I know what Dennis does. The nice thing about it is it's like the Ron Popeil of the tour. You set it and forget it. You agree to go. You give him some money, and you go. You don't have to worry about a damn thing. Your flight's booked, your transfers, your room's ready. If there's an issue, they just fix the shit. And then normally there's a party and there's other things. You can upgrade your tickets if you want. Buck Fan Tours is his site. Now, Jason says it's a little too pricey for him. Is it more expensive than rolling your own? Yes. Is it more expensive than rolling your own exactly the same way? No. You can do it on the cheap, but you won't do it. So Tampa fans can't sell out Buck Fan Tours trips. No. Tampa fans can't sell out shit. Right? Buck for Life Hookers, I've never seen that as an option on his website. You could send him a note to support, and maybe they'll add it. So no, we can't sell anything, but that's okay. That's not what I was saying. What I was saying, we do sell out Mons, I agree. My point is, start saving your money now. What it ends up being, so the Denver trip, what did it cost? Now, it wasn't fair because I had a friend out there, so I stayed with a friend's family, so that made it cheap. But you figure you're going to stay for a couple of days, airfare, call airfare $400, call hotel $150 a night. It's not cheap, right? You're going to be in it for a grand, $800. But that said, you're going to have an amazing experience, right? And so if you guys are interested, we should put something up on the What the Buck site and get a bunch of What the Buck people out there, because and Rick said it, WDB Commish. Going to the away games is really a unique experience. It really is, especially when you're not going to, like, Philadelphia or to Oakland, right? So, anyway, I don't know why I went on that little diatribe other than the fact that I really had a great time in Denver. It was a great city, and I recommend everyone do those sorts of things because it's a whole hell of a lot of fun to get out there and meet other fans. All right, unless you guys have something you want me to talk about it, then I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to record this, put it up on the podcast. And Oakland may be a great city, but their stadium is not a great place. Okay, so that's all good. With that being said, I'm going to check the Facebook page one more time. We had a couple more people weigh in on the Skulls and Swords, it looks like. I don't want to omit them. Christopher Helm, Sword David, Skull the D-Line, Cheater. Joe Beatty, Skull Dotson, Sword Levante. That was the two that got added. All right, well, that's it. Spent, did I miss anything as far as announcements? I don't think I did. And if I didn't, then we will get out of here. And there's another drink for you guys. Don't know. She's not going to tell me. So, all right. Well, I don't think I did. So, we will see you at the tailgate. Keep paying attention to Twitter. Pay attention to Facebook. All of the information out there will be put out. We need, if you're asking about what to bring to a tailgate, what do I do if I've never been before? Bring money if you want to. Throw in the treasure chest. Buy raffle tickets. Do 50-50. Do all of them. It would be great if you did all of them. We actually had someone donate their 50-50 side back to the charity, which was awesome. Food is generally covered. Chef Red does a great job. You guys know that. But if you want to bring some sort of a special dish, sure, do that. We always need ice. We can always use mixers and things like that. But generally speaking, we cover all the basic stuff. We've got some people. I think the guy's coming in from the Netherlands. He's going to help us set up. If you come out early, about 7:30, we're setting up. We usually have coffee and Bailey's. And we get it done. So bring what you want. Bring a good attitude. Get out there. Let's have a good time. And we're going to check out this foaling, which is bowling with a football. Kurt Creel is checking it out for us, too. But we'll have cornhole as well. So that said, thanks to everyone out there for listening, for paying attention. We'll get the podcast posted. And we will see you guys Sunday if you guys don't see each other at the Ryan Neese event. I am out of here.
Work, 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 work. Hello, boys. Have a good night's rest. I miss you. Thanks for tuning in to What the Buck, brought to you live by whatthebuck.net and the Moohead Radio Network. Make sure you register at www.whatthebuck.net and subscribe to us on YouTube at www.youtube.com/user/whatthebuck to receive news about the show and overall Bucks news in general. Until next time, keep emailing your questions to questions@whatthebuck.net, and most of all, keep supporting your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On behalf of Old School, the Doc, and the rest of the What the Buck crew, this is Big Pie Zahn saying goodnight, and see you next time. And most of all, go Bucks!